Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer. This is Hotel Mars, episode N, with Dr. David Livingston of the space show, Dr. Space himself. And we're very pleased to welcome our longtime colleague, Dr. David Grinspoon of the Planetary Science Institute, because we're dealing with Venus, the other planet that has great promise in our solar system. Rocky and wet once upon a time, maybe in future. And we welcome David Grinspoon because all these years, David has been my guide on Venus. And for many years, David would quietly suggest that Venus was being overlooked by NASA and the European Space Agency. Everything was for Mars. Mars this, Mars that, mission to Mars. But that is now being corrected. Dr. Grinspoon, a very good evening to you. The meeting that caught my attention to invite you today at Hotel Mars is Venera D, Venus Cloud Habitability System Workshop, November 29th to December 3rd. I believe it is a virtual meeting. The purpose of this workshop is to discuss the formation and stability of Venus clouds over time and their role in potential habitability. David Grinspoon, this is you. The first time we met, you were life in the Venus clouds. What has happened? How have you become mainstream in a mere 17 years? Good evening to you, David.
Good evening. It's very nice to see and hear both of you. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think if you have a fringe idea and hold on to it for enough years, or in this case, decades, then you just may become mainstream if you're lucky or wise. And I thought from early on in my career when I started studying Venus that the clouds were a possible place of habitability. And I urged this in books and papers and talks. And I think I was sort of tolerated by my colleagues because I was also doing other work that was seen as more mainstream. But it was not an idea that was really embraced for a long time, although interestingly, more recently, it's become more popular, and there have been a number of papers and indeed a couple of meetings, including the upcoming one you mentioned, where a number of Venus scientists are now considering the possibility of life in the clouds.
Life in the clouds? How, David? That was always the joy of you being an astrobiologist. What are we looking at? Something that leaked from the Earth because of detritus, or some unusual chemical composition?
Well, I mean, the first point to make is that the clouds themselves are a relatively benign environment. You know, when you first talk about life on Venus, you say, oh, no, it's impossible, because everybody thinks about life on the surface, and it's so hot and so dry there. There's no way you could have anything at least resembling life as we know it, made out of organic molecules, which are just not stable in that environment. But in the clouds, it's relatively cool and low pressure, and there's a lot of interesting chemistry there, we know, and some chemistry that we don't understand. And when there's interesting chemistry in a relatively benign environment, that makes you wonder, well, is it possible that something could evolve to live there? The next question is the one that you just posed, which is, how did it get there? And one possibility is transport from Earth. But it's also true that the more we learn about the history of Venus, it's starting to seem as though it was Earth-like, not just early on, but perhaps Earth-like for a long time. For billions of years, maybe having relatively promising, that is biologically promising, oceans on the surface. And when those oceans dried out, the question is, did any life there also die out, or did it migrate perhaps up to the clouds, which is now the sort of remaining refuge for possible habitability on Venus?
Dr. Livingston, you have a question.
The somewhat recent commentary about phosphine being in the clouds, how do you interpret that?
Well, I was really interested to hear about this because if there really is phosphine, and as you know, it's controversial now, it was reported, and then there's some critique of the observational technique, and nobody's really sure. We need to repeat those observations. But that's the kind of thing that would maybe clue us in to life on another planet, a chemical that shouldn't be there. And the thing about phosphine, it's a simple molecule, just one phosphorus atom and three hydrogen atoms. And on Earth, all the phosphine in the atmosphere is made by life. There's no other source. And so phosphine is a gas that has been identified as a possible biosignature on other planets. That is, even before this Venus discovery, some scientists wrote a paper saying if we found phosphine in another atmosphere, it could be a sign of life. So, of course, it's intriguing. And if there is phosphine, there's something weird going on chemically, and that weird thing could be life. So I don't see it as proof of life on Venus, but I see it as, you know, just another interesting kind of strange chemical clue that we need to follow up on and learn to, you know, learn, is it really there? And then if it is, learn to understand its source.
Dr. Grinspoon, I'm going to take advantage of our long friendship and be difficult about panspermia, or about what we've discovered since you first had the genius to say, what about the clouds? Oumuamua, the asteroid from another galaxy, another start in another world, passed through our solar system so fast that we couldn't track it closely. We just got vague understandings of its shape. It wasn't a spaceship. It was an asteroid. I understand that. But if that carried anything that resembled the extremophiles of Earth, the ability to exist in radiation, the ability to exist in sulfur, or the little creatures, those little bear creatures that we talk about in molecules, you know, little, their name.
Tardigrades.
I think of them as little bears. I had to come up with the name. Thank you, David. On Oumuamua, that's certainly suggestive that life has traveled around our solar system, through our solar system. Now, I know I'm being difficult, but certainly that has to be part of the discussion about the clouds of habitability of Venus.
No, absolutely, you're right. It's not that difficult. I mean, there are different levels on which panspermia could naturally be occurring, and there's possible transfer between planets. We know that stuff gets blasted off of Mars and lands on Earth. Presumably, stuff has been blasted off of Earth and landed on Venus and could have carried microbes. So if one planet was habitable but not inhabited, it could have been seeded by a debris from another habitable nearby planet. Now, another extension of that is the wild possibility that you just brought up, that life could not only be naturally transferred between planets, but between star systems. And Oumuamua confirms a picture that we long suspected, that there is a certain amount of natural transfer between star systems. So it would be more difficult for something to survive that journey, because it's a really long journey and there's a lot of cosmic rays and other, sort of natural processes that could kill, you know, destroy DNA, destroy organisms. But it's certainly not impossible. And we don't know the limits of very hardy organisms. For instance, you mentioned the tardigrades. And maybe, just maybe, something could survive that interstellar journey. And so you could have panspermia, not just between neighboring planets, but across the galaxy.
Dr. Livingston?
Is there a sweet spot in the clouds where, if life was there of some sort, it would be there?
Yeah, there's an altitude around, it's about 50 kilometers off of the surface, where the temperature and pressure is about what it is in the room where you're sitting right now, roughly room, you know, surface temperature and pressure of Earth. And it happens to be that same altitude where there are these very large cloud particles that are at least partially of unknown composition, and also a lot of intriguing chemical signs, some unusual chemistry that we haven't explained yet. So this sort of middle cloud region of Venus, I think, is a very interesting place to possibly look for life, where the conditions may be right and where there's possibly energy and nutrients and sort of all the stuff that life needs.
We're going to go looking for those sweet spots with two probes from NASA, one from the ESA, I believe, when we come back with Dr. David Grinspoon of the Planetary Science Institute and David Livingston of the Space Show, Dr. Space himself. This is Hotel Mars. Not Hotel Venus, Hotel Mars, but it's a subset of Hotel Venus. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.